weirdos to start showing up.
Exactly.
I walked by the Stanford one today and took out my Mog and Davin and waited for some action, but they had nothing for me. So
just thought you were wearing it ironically. They're like, that's obviously ironic.
Or there was a notice sent out: if you see this guy, this is Eugenius Robinson. He will fuck you up. Which is not a surprise. No one steps to Eugene. You know, you have a lot of people the dentist in Little Shop of Horrors. Oh, please. Live, not Memorex.
Go ahead. You know, because I was sitting at a table out there with two other people, and they went to get something, right? And some guy comes up and starts taking a chair. I go, what are you doing? He goes, are you using a chair? I go, you know what? You seem like a smart guy. What do you think is happening on this table? Like, there's a place, there are plates in two other places and my plate. You think I have imaginary friends? Put that fucking chair down. He goes, I don't understand why you're so hostile. I go, and I don't understand how you could be going to school here and be so fucking stupid. Leave the chair alone. He goes, I'm sorry, man. I'm just tweaking. I go, yeah, okay, whatever.
Tweaking?
Yeah.
You're going to be tweaking all right.
Yeah, shit.
Ronda Rousey ruined reputation. Live and in public, if you will, on this week's episode of The Shoes Fit, a show where you solve salacious situations by stepping into the shoes of the shaken, the chagrined, the kerfuffed. I'm your host, Lexi Old, author. That's seven secret sources of inspiration, a snappy guide for creative procrastinators. And joining me, I'm hunched over like, oh. Joining me, guests, John Nash from Hey Not the Face podcast and Eugenius Robinson, author of the memoir, A Walk Across Dirty Water and Straight into Murder's Row. There you go. Collectively, the Pancholes.
Pancholes.
Subscribe if you haven't already to this channel and join our Patreon, patreon.com/theshoesfit. Now let's get to stepping, Eugene.
Sir.
Step in the shoes of anyone in the Ronda Rousey business. Instead of doing a victory lap on a historic career, Ronda's been ruffling feathers during her book tour.
Yeah.
How do you, as someone in the Ronda Rousey business, manage her messaging missteps live and in public, if you will?
Okay, total disclosure, I had a very chummy relationship with her mother at a certain point. I did a big article on her for Ozzy. I found her to be completely engaging, genuine. The only other person's mother I got closest to in a strange turn of events was Cain Velasquez's mom. God rest her soul. She's very cool, very, very cool woman, as is Ronda's. But this whole thing was a catastrophic misstep. Anybody, like when I've beaten up guys at shows and I've sometimes announced to the audience, hey, if anybody in the room cares about this man, you might want to keep him from getting knocked out a third time, please. You know, I think somebody, look, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity. That's not exactly true. Okay, because the audience that she was drawing from to buy this book is the audience that she has now alienated, right? There are careful ways to parse that. Like, I am no stranger in my memoir. I took shots at people, but, you know, did I? You could tell an uncomfortable truth at the exact right time, and it might seem like you're taking a shot, but you could go, hey, I'm just a truth teller. So there are ways to lambast a Rogan or a lambast, but this blanket shotgun thing that she did, attacking that, I mean, you got to know. The publishers of the book are sitting there going, what the fuck did you do? And to which, if I were her, I would turn around and go, what the fuck did you let me do? You know, from their point of view, they're like, you're the expert.
Look what you let me do.
Yeah. Or alternatively, where is Travis? Is Travis going to, is your partner? Maybe he read that book and go, maybe they said, oh, this is going to generate some heat. And maybe everybody heard the word heat and thought it was okay. Who's going to buy this book now? Who? The most salient portion of the books now have been addressed, and Jimmy Smith, who I'm not a massive fan of, but Jimmy Smith put it, he goes like, you know, this is a classic case of kiss up, kick down, you know, and of course, then that recalls for us the fact, the much rumored fact that she slept with the bald one, Dana White, Which is then another unpleasant bit of imagery that you got now floating around in your head.
Thank you.
I mean, you think WWE fans are going to buy this book? How many millions? Yeah, exactly.
And Logan Paul, they say he's so great. I mean, you know, they gave him all the time they gave me, and then they stopped giving me time. It's like, jeez.
This is like the functional equivalent of, you know, you talk about burning the candle at both ends, of burning the bridge at both sides. You have no place to flee to. You literally have no constituency that's going to be happy that this book was written or interested in purchasing it, because it shot its load in the pieces that have come out in the last few days. There's nothing that we don't know that's going to be in there that we haven't seen. So why buy this book, and to what end, to what gain? You want to level people's karma? You want to balance all accounts? Yeah, okay, good for you. You did that. You know what you didn't do? You didn't sell the fucking book. And if you're somebody, listen, I've dealt with publishers for years now with the book, and I got to tell you, they are massively chagrined at this turn of events. This is not the kind of heat that sells books. It's the kind of heat that does the exact opposite thing. She's a news item without the clear-cut benefit of having generated sales as a result of it. So, look, Kim Gordon gets dumped by Thurston Moore from the band Sonic Youth. She writes a book, and people are waiting for her to dish on him. That book was a hit, right? Because she knows she was quiet, and she's got something to say, and you know she's gonna shit all over the man, and that's why you buy the book, because you're like, oh shit, I'm like peeking through the window of somebody's, you know, domestic disturbance. This is nothing. This is just blind lashing out for reasons that is it gonna hurt Joe? I don't think so. Is it going to hurt WWE? I don't think so. Is it going to advance her fortunes? I don't think so. So that's the troika. That's the troika. You have failed on every count. So good for you. Glad you got it off your chest. You should have just complained to Travis over dinner. Instead, you went national with it, public with it, and that was a massive, massive mistake. How to fix it at this point?
Challenge Gina Carano?
No. The way to fix it is to... This is dirty. But the way to fix it is to go down Me Too Alley and say that Dana White, that this was not a sexual relationship of your liking. You know, I stopped short of calling it rape. It was a terrible thing. I felt I was forced to do it. And now you got something. But that, I don't believe that to be the case, but that might save you. You know, you're the boogeyman. Pick a bigger boogeyman, and that might save you. Otherwise, you got nothing. Sex tape. That's right. Sex tape. That would be good,
too.
You
didn't say the two words. I don't know if John Nash will, or you think it's just...
I don't, man. Honest to God, out of the people I'd want to see on OnlyFans, Honda Housey is not one of them. I'm sorry.
Man. What's your take, John? Did he take your advice?
Only if she would... appease her fans. Only no, she was in San Diego recently, and a friend of my girlfriend's friend was hosting the
your girlfriend. Hey. Since when? You're not gonna slip that in there, bro. You got a girlfriend.
The cat worked
for a while since
nice. Whole time I thought you were gay, man.
Just because we had slept together a couple times does not mean I'm gay.
Hey, no. According to Andrew Tate,
that's
if
right.
he had sex with a woman and if he has sex with women and for pleasure it. And enjoyed it, yeah. then he's gay.
Yep.
Yeah. It shows you how much you pay attention, Eugene, because I've talked about my girlfriend numerous times.
Not at all. Oh, you're trying to curry favor with her now. I see. You talk about her a lot.
Believe me, she's not watching. Believe me, she is not watching.
Barbara, Canada. You don't
know
her.
I'm not even talking about the one that passed away that you made fun of so that's not even. Eugene was just mean that day to me when it was going through some stuff. So. I don't even know where we're going with this. Ronda Rousey was in San Diego, and apparently her friend said she was very nice and everything. So part of it, one of it is if there's an attraction to this book outside the combat sports. You know what? I used to have my former girlfriend that did pass away was a Canadian girlfriend, and she was in Canada for a while. So
it was Barbara.
I just loved this. That was one of my great things was, my Canadian girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah.
But back to this question, Ann. I do wonder if there's some appeal to her book outside of the combat sports, the pro wrestling people, because they did say there was a crowd and almost none of them watch combat sports and knew nothing about. She did.
Yeah, okay, so
you guys are the best.
This is never gonna end. But I love all this stuff because I would say the same shit anyway, so it didn't matter. So,
yeah. All right. Sorry. Your take on Honda Housing. Go ahead.
What's hilarious about this is, again, I know me and Eugene talked about this because we talked about the whole point. When I turned 40, what happened to the people we were dating? So that was at one point. So he doesn't remember. He doesn't care. That shows you how little he's so uninterested in my personal life. But anyways, back to Housie. So most of the people there were not into the fight business or new pro wrestling. So they didn't have, so I wonder if there's an appeal to her book outside the combat sports world, but when she was fighting, I noticed one thing was crazy. There were people showing up. You could tell never watch fights otherwise.
Right.
At the bar, there were tables of women and girls. There were tables, obviously, of lesbian groups who were there, which was something comical, based on her, you know, some of her other statements. She is not the most pro-feminist female athlete ever heard, or do nothing bitches, and the way she complained about all right. The other women being crybabies. It's like, she is not looking out for sister. She is not part, you know, so
pretty kitties.
Yeah. So it's, that I found amusing that she was this kind of this now female representation of feminism at the time. We're like, I don't think she's looking out for the rest of you at all. But so that I do wonder if there's an appeal that outside of combat sports, who are not aware of just how kind of terrible she was. And I did like that Jimmy Smith brought that up, because my understanding, when she came out of Strikeforce, she was pretty easy to work with because she was so excited to be there. But later, especially after the Holly Holm fight, the year before the Holly Holm fight, when she became such a big star, that's when I heard the kind of it turned, and she did not like the little people. She did not like anybody else talking to her. She wanted special treatment. And I don't know, as much as we're aware of that, and everybody in combat sports is aware that she has a fragile ego, which is probably why she's so great at fighting, because she is such a narcissist. And arrogant that she cannot possibly admit that she's ever second to anything. That's probably what got her where she is. But we're the only ones aware of that. I don't know if she's doing the rounds in some of the talk shows, if the other people that might be interested in picking up this book, thinking it's something that it's for someone else, is gonna pick up or be aware of how bad or how misleading some of her statements are. So I would double down and just say it's the jealous combat sports people. Look at how misogynistic the combat sports world. Look how terrible people involved. That's why they're attacking me, because that's the type of people, and that's why I left both pro wrestling and UFC.
For this book to be a success, she would have to go on a talk show circuit and be affable, engaging, funny, and smart. As I say those words, I'm sure you know in your head that she is none of those things. So,
the first time around when she had her fame, she did. I think this is narcissism. She was affable. I mean, she was cracking jokes. People thought that she was, when she made the talk show circuit,
you know,
people liked her. It also was the anomaly too, right? Of the fact like, oh, wow, like she's, you know, she's a fighter, right? So there's a certain kind of newness, which is kind of weird, because in a way that almost criminally, Gina Carano never had the mainstream, even though she was on, you know, on CBS, like didn't have the same kind of talk show circuit thing.
Let me put this out there. Having gone to media, been at media tables at Strikeforce events and Bellator events, I have to tell you, Scott Coker, despite him sicking his attorneys on me, Scott Coker ran a really fucking genial operation. Like in Media Row, I felt great after going to a Bellator or a Strikeforce show. Absolutely great. I was treated like a human being. They were very nice. Anything you need, anything. Very nice. Now, the UFC, completely different. treated like a fucking criminal from beginning to end. You were put in your place. Rolling Stone guys were being ushered through, given top access, like you had Studio 54, where you were given shitty seat. And, you know, there's a possibility that maybe, you know, this affects the tone and the timbre of your interactions. You see how everybody else is rolling. Go, okay, cool. I mean, look, I met the president. And I have to say, it was less of a rigmarole than getting an eighth row seat in media row from the UFC.
Wow.
It's fucking ridiculous. So maybe it just, you know, was that's an out for her, by the way, you know.
I think part of it more is, though, she was someone from the Olympics that was dying for acknowledgement. I think she viewed herself as this major sports figure, and she was dying for acknowledgement. So when she hit it, she was just enamored that she's getting all this attention. This is what I've been dying for. Now, after a while, constant when they're putting on the press circuit, and after all, she's like, I'm the star. I mean, I've proven it. People are here lining up to see me. Why am I putting up with this shit? And that's when I think she got the it always went to her head. I mean, and yeah. Again, I gotta say, in some ways, as much as I'm mocking her for this is probably why she was so good for so long, is because she refuses, because her goddamn mom would make her wake up in the middle of the night to put an arm bar on her. They refuse to acknowledge that they're mere mortals and that they can't beat anybody.
Well, here you go. Here's something that two words, Nathaniel West, three words, Day of the Locust. Read it. That's what the distorting effect that fame does to you. If I were her, I'd just blame it on that and then ship myself off to rehab for something or other.
Man, that or blame CTE.
Yeah,
she kind of did. For our losses, I guess.
Yeah. I got to give Holly Holm now. There's someone that really knows how to craft a response, because her response was perfect about how, you know, she didn't I'm not gonna, you know, I don't know what her exact phrasing was. I'm not gonna dunk on Holly Holm. I'm not gonna dunk on Ronda Rousey. I'm not gonna deny what her, but I just think, you know, she just won't acknowledge that someone was better her that night. And that was me.
Yep.
Or someone's better. And just the way she said it, calm, you know, without like ripping it and mocking Ronda, but also laying out the facts. I beat her fair and square. I'm better.
Yep.
Damn.
Yep.
Speaking about being better or being delusional, John, step in the shoes of James Carville. Was your rant to shame disillusioned 20-year-olds who might not vote into voting, or to shame the mainstream media for focusing on the wrong issues live and in public, if you will?
Consider it's Carville. I think he was actually trying to shame the youth instead of. It would be smart, though, because I do think the media is not focusing. The media has been terrible. They're not. They never focus on the right issues. They're trying to create horse races to get better. The better ratings and stuff. But I think Carville was completely crafting his rant because he's frustrated that the youth are not fully on board the Democratic Party. They're not riding with Biden. And I mean, there's different, everything's a spectrum. There's different reasons. Some of the youth are fucking idiots and they're not riding for Biden for completely insane reasons. Other people have legitimate causes and reasons. So, but I think he read Gaia Texera too much. And in some ways, if this was in the past, this would be genius. If this was the Bill Clinton era, because in the Bill Clinton era, there was still the party alignment had, you know, we hadn't shifted the educational shift that we've seen in the Democrats and Republicans. The Bill Clinton era, remember, he went after Sister Soulja, and he had to send this messaging that he's not, you know, that was, I'm against the blacks, I'm coming down hard. This would be, I'm coming down hard on the youth, almost like something maybe Hubert Humphrey should have done back in the 60s, 68 convention. And you give a signal to the hard hats, like, I'm more on your side. This, I'm a port for the real working man, the silent majority, and not for these young, you know, coddled college kids. But we're not in that era anymore, so I don't think that message works. I don't think the people, you know, that would not work. But I could imagine Carville thinking that still works. I could imagine Carville stuck in the 90s thinking that's what I got to do. So my advice to Carville, as usual, is just shut the F up. Because he's as annoying as effing hell. And he also is so proud of the work he did with Clinton. And he ignores the fact of, as much as Clinton was successful winning elections, Clinton did a lot of horseshit, terrible shit that we're now still unwinding decades later. that only came, we only came to realize 10 years after he left office, like, it was probably a really bad idea to deregulate everything. It was probably a really bad idea to, you know, to screw over the unions with NAFTA and not sign, have better trade rules involved. Just a ton of stupid ass shit. PNTR with China. Maybe we should have rethought how we're going to do that, because now we're in conflict with them, basically. So, yeah, so Carville, my number advice to my advice to Carville is always just shut the hell up, you and your Louisiana Cajun accent, because I can't stand it.
Damn. Is he still married to the Republican chick?
Yeah, I can't tell which is which anymore. They've aged that point where they look just alike. The same features.
He's more like Waylon, I guess in effect, he kind of looked like, he looks more like Madam. I mean, the puppet Madam from Waylon Flowers and Madam. He kind of, he has that kind of, you know, that kind of
expression. I think I think they're going at the youth of America all wrong. You know, if I were Carville, I'd say, hey, you know what? I have the money and the means to scoot the fuck out of here when this gets flushed down the grand toilet. It's gonna get flushed down. You guys gotta live with it. What are you gonna do? Busk in Europe? No, this is your future, not mine. My future is done. I'm finished. I'm off to like the Slick Rick line. Back to dating sluts and stars. Au revoir. No, fuck you. I'm not out there pleading for your votes. You want to vote for Trump, or you want to sit on your hands and sideline? Let Trump win. I'm gone. You know. And I actually got some pushback on saying stuff like that from none other than daughter number one, who called me on the carpet and said, you know, when you say stuff like that, it makes me feel fucking terrible because I'm stuck here, you know, and I'm having anxiety about raising my son here and being stuck here. And it's unkind. Just talk about how excited you are to go to Spain. I said, the future is in your hands. Take it. You got friends, you know, mobilize, do something. And I go, moreover, you're not stuck here. I didn't get an 8,000 square foot house to live in with two people. Yeah, it's big enough for everybody to live there. So
thanks, Eugene. Hey, come on, my friends.
Yeah. So I think you know, Carville is like John is saying or suggesting, pulling from a playbook that's out of time, which just happens to old guys. You know, I was telling somebody something the other day. I go, "You're fucking Mr. Magoo," and the guy goes, "Mr. Magoo, what is that?" I was like, I can't even insult people anymore. It's like I've aged out of insulting people. I said, Mr. Magoo, don't you know Mr. Magoo? The guy's like, nope. I'm like, okay, I'm done. You know. So, I think, and media, what are you talking about? Media? What's like, that's like five guys now. Murdoch, Bezos, and the Hearst, and then like two other guys. There's no media. There's no media like when you had, you know, Mr. 125, Amsterdam News. Come on. You know, I used to know the guy who was the editor-in-chief of the Oakland Tribune. That's gone. Everything is gone. There's no media. It's just a bunch of voices. You're Musk and these other cats. You know.
Man.
See, vecino.
So, Eugene, step in the shoes. You talk about people being old and references not registering with the youth. Step in the shoes of Jerry Seinfeld. Your lamentations about comedy inspired a new generation to interpret your 20th century career through a modern lens. Is this an attempt to rebrand? And if not, should it be live and in public, if you will?
It is, but he's been sniffing around. First of all, he's incredibly thin-skinned. Like, I don't know if you've seen him on two shows, Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis, and then the Jiminy Glick stand, which he did twice with Martin Short as Jiminy Glick. And you watch those three bits of film. You can get them on YouTube right now. And he actually, even though it's everybody knows the deal beforehand, if you've seen it, you know what it is. He seems, you know, Jiminy Glick announces Jerry Seinfeld from the 80s. That's how he announces him. And then Zach Galifianakis asks him to sit down because he's got Cardi B. Could you move over? He says, I'm not even between two ferns now. I'm next to a fern. Yeah, move over. He says, okay, everybody, yeah, that's Jerry J. And he goes, what's a J for? And Galifianakis goes, Jew. And he's like, okay, he takes his seat. It actually bothers him. You can see it. You can see it on his face. It bothers him a little bit. Like, he knows a joke, and it bothers him. And he's been itching around because all these retrospectives, starting with Keith, what's the guy's name? The wacky next door neighbor who had the meltdown at the comedy show. Michael Richards. So first of all, he was being called on to defend it, and he sidestepped that. He's in there, he's going against the bull. He sidestepped that, started doing Comedians in Cars, had on Eddie Murphy, hanging, Dave Chappelle, he's got this guy, the brother. And then they asked him about one of the critiques with that TV show as it came up on its anniversary. People go, how can you justify doing a show that looks in New York, that looks nothing like New York, which is something that people have said a lot about Friends. And, this was a fucking minefield, and he could have a little bit of thought, a little bit of careful consideration. You sidestep that shit, what about Woody Allen? You could have any number of ways that you could have done. And he just goes, oh, so TVs has to be a direct representation of reality. And I go, this is going to get him in trouble. This shit is going to get him in trouble. And it took a few years. I mean, he skated on a lot. What about when he was going out with that 17-year-old Shona, which I think he – isn't that the – yeah, did he marry her? Or did he marry the woman after her?
Did he marry both?
Some such thing, So he's had his – he's had these flirtations with death, and this one now about, cancel culture. Not only is – he's always been a hack. He is a hack, and now he's a late hack, a day late and a fucking dollar short on this. This is all – it's been well established. This is all kind of dying. Nobody's really been canceled. I can still see every single person that's supposedly been canceled on expensive comedy specials on Netflix. Nobody's been canceled. Shut the fuck up, and here he is standing up trying to pimp something, talking about he's canceled. You know what? You're a 70-year-old millionaire, a multimillionaire. I guess that's what you do, but it doesn't make us laugh anymore. So,
The weird thing, too, is he just made an appearance that I thought was a kind of a waste in the wake of how he's been conducting himself recently on Curb Your Enthusiasm, the series finale. And yeah. I was watching him. I was like, oh, that's right, Jerry Seinfeld. Oh, all he's right. Funny. And then you see the fact that Larry David just totally has a show that's not PC, right? That's lasted for how many seasons? Also has a more diverse cast, J.B. Smooth. So it's like almost everything that Seinfeld could have done, I don't know if he could have done, but didn't do, Larry David just did it. Anyway, what's your take, John?
In fact, what he should do is blame everything on Larry David.
You're making me look bad, Larry.
I'm gonna offend Jerry Seinfeld here because I don't like Jerry Seinfeld. I didn't like Seinfeld Show. I like Curb Your Enthusiasm. I thought Seinfeld was lame because it was set on a network show with a laugh track, and the way it was staged, the acting. Jerry's a terrible actor. Where Curb Your Enthusiasm just felt more natural. It was funnier. Often the same jokes. I would laugh hysterically in Curb, but I wouldn't laugh at all in Seinfeld. And I never found Seinfeld very funny, but I'm going to defend him here because I watched that interview. I saw it came up and I watched it, and I don't think I think it's somewhat being misinterpreted because he was talking about shows that everybody used to watch, and he brought up the shows how we had network TV and tens of millions of people would watch Cheers and All in the Family and all these shows where we have Curb Your Enthusiasm and other shows that are much more risque or as risque as those shows, pushing the envelope, but they're on niched audiences on cable somewhere on a streaming service, very few. Much smaller audience than what they had back then. So that was part of what he's saying. But I also think he's misdiagnosing the problem or misexplaining, because what he's doing is what happens to a lot of people is because the right took the term woke and PC and just ran with it and kind of, and distorted its original meaning. Everybody says that when they really mean something else. When they mean woke, what they're often talking about, and it's, I guess you could call it woke as well, is the HR department mentality that's taken over everything in America, especially at the corporate level. And as someone that works in LA, Hollywood, and works in a company that also does, production, you can kind of see how that mentality is taken over, because when you're doing big things, big entertainment, you got to take your script. You got to send it to what? Sensitivity readers. Yep. Who the hell are these people? Then you kind of think about, really what they are is we produce too many people with college degrees in the professional class. We need jobs for them. So let's just create imaginary jobs for them to do that sounds important. because they really know what is how to be sensitive to the common person of whatever ethnic group they represent or whatever, you know, they're not even from, you know, Robin DiAngelo is white and she's the spokesperson for every minority in America because she is there to tell you what hurts people's feelings.
Whisper.
So I think that's part of, if you look at it that way, what he's talking about is not so much of like, you know, the leftist PC culture is taking over, like the leftism has taken over. It's the corporate managerial HR department wokeism, corporate America, who always goes in and tries to take over stuff that they find threatening, reshape it, repurpose it to their benefit. And they've done it again with a lot of the stuff that probably the youth and the young people and left were like, oh, that's terrible. I think that if you view it from that lens, I kind of agree with them because that's what's happened. Corporate America has taken something that a lot of people are like, oh, we got to be, you know, we got to be more tolerant. Yes, we got to be more tolerant. That's why we need to hire 50 people to go over your joke with a fine line and take out anything that can offend anybody, but also make sure we don't make any references to something that can hurt our stock price. Let's go in there too. Let's make sure that. And also make sure we don't make any references about how bad our product is. We don't want any jokes about that. So I think if you look at it that way, I think he might be onto something, but that's, I guess, a generous reading of what he said.
I think one problem I thought you were going is I think a lot of problem with the corporate stuff and things that for some people is well-meaning, it's just too performative. And the individuals, like you said, who are supposed to be the experts just don't know what they're talking about and just and are they're talking to audiences, corporate audience, executive audiences that are just yesing everything. And just really don't have a care in the world for the underlying intent of what things are supposed to be about. But
yeah, you know, and I also think his statements kind of fall in line with some other. Keenan Ivory Wayans kind of said something similar recently. And then if you look at Jessica Lange talking about the companies don't want to that they're unwilling to take risk, creative risks over financial. In some ways, that's they're all kind of talking about the same thing. That the companies that run Hollywood now, that there's the idea of risk for mass entertainment, for like CBS show entertainment, is out the window because they have so many other concerns.
Man, who's in Legion of Doom then?
Well, I got to go with. I just thought this was just kind of genius because if you're a villain. Two ways to look at this, I guess. One is if you're a villain, it's good to see a villain just boast, be cocky and arrogant, you know, drop the mic and leave. And I got to go with, did you see the Paramount earnings call? Now, earnings call are for you own their stocks. You want to be reaffirmed that things are going great, that the company is headed in the right direction. You want to hear high numbers. You want them to answer your questions. So what they did for the earnings call, can their CEO right before the earnings call? Came on, took no questions, just rapid fire through an 8 minutes earnings call. Usually these take like an hour, you know, half an hour to an hour. Just flew through it, took no questions, ended it, and then just started playing in a loop the Mission Impossible theme and ended it, just left. And you got to give them the balls for doing that. Just like in your face, we don't even respect our investors. The most amazing thing, their share price was up 3% at the end of the day. People loved it. And so sometimes I'm thinking like, you know, that was just like villainy in your face. We don't care what you peasants think, but it's also sometimes you need a villain. You cheer for the villain. Like when the Dr. Doom's a bad guy, but not when he's fighting the Red Skull. And so when the Paramount's coming down and saying that we are putting in the face of the financial people, you got to go, I give you credit because you are fighting an eviler force. And so I put whoever put that earnings call together, that is a double heel turn pro wrestling move. And you deserve all the credit.
I always rooted for Dr. Doom. I thought he was more relatable than Reed Richards.
A couple good stories though made him just you hate the guy. Remember when Doomstad got blown up with his invincible robots and he killed all the civilians? I mean, that guy was a monster in that one. So you don't remember that? Yeah, those people were losers. Do you see how unattractive they were? He had to replace the architecture was terrible. He had to replace that.
Oh man, who's Miss CAF, Eugene?
Well, let me pull it up on my phone because I've always listened. You know, sometimes you got to hurt the people that you love, and I'm going to do so tonight. Listen, as a guy who sings in a band, I've been subject to many different types of brickbats. People have thrown lit cigarettes at me and tried to brain me with Miller beer bottles. And this is my mom, you know, so Hey, Seinfeld, I'm coming here to put tips. Okay, yeah. You know, and look, and I've had problems with audiences for, you know, different, not respecting the artist in this instance, but there's certain things that I've started to do as I've gotten older, right? I've started to develop the Nina Simone approach. Like, I get paid no matter what I do tonight. So you guys don't behave, or Dad is going to turn this thing around. That's the kind of stage guy you want to be as you get older. You don't want to be the guy in the dirty bathrobe screaming about kids on the lawn. And that is exactly what one of my main men just did. I'm talking about Iron Maiden's Bruce Dickinson.
What'd he do?
He flipped the fuck out. He starts screaming at fans from the stage for smoking and vaping. And then apparently somebody's vape pen or whatever it was kind of, you know, blew up, and it stops the show. And it's like, look, man, you know, and Bruce is always kept in shape, supposedly never indulged in excessive drugging or drinking. You know, he used to lift weights and exercise. You know, he's a very physical performer. And
fencing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't pull out the sword and go after him.
Yeah, can before, I play with madness?
Before they change the laws,
you better run to the hills.
I would, yeah, run. Yeah, that's it. This is a great song. In fact, my tattoo, one of my second or third tattoos was based on Fast Eddie. So I'm as big of a fan. That's the only like vaguely rock related thing that I have on my body, right? So I think there were ways. Look, I would come back from Germany when they were smoking in the audience, addicted. Because of secondhand smoke, I would find myself like, man, I feel itchy. And I finally figured out, I go, this is going to kill me. I keep doing these shows. Nobody smokes like the German smokes. It's like, you know, it's chain smoking in a really ridiculous way. So I understand his chagrin, but you can't be that guy. You can be a cranky old guy if you're like John Cougar Mellencamp. Fuck you. Fuck this audience. I'm leaving. Okay, that works. I like that look on Johnny Cougar, but you know, or Vince Neil passing out drunk and not able to hit the notes because he sucks so bad because he's drunk. I like that. That's another good old guy look, you know. But this is a scolding people for doing so, and it was completely accidental. It's not like the person caused the thing to explode from the stage. Who do you think your fans are? You think this is the fucking opera? What do you? See, it's just a bad look, man, and it's not going to play well. I mean, especially since I've recently heard a lot of people say, you know, he's not the first singer for Iron Maiden, you know. And so people now are like, well, you know, that first guy was pretty cool. It's just a tough time to be shitting on your audience. Tickets are more expensive than they've ever been. We've got more choices in audience. Ticketmaster's taking a bigger bite. And as far as I know, Iron Maiden hasn't put out a record worth shit in at least a decade. So you might want to trod lightly. And something else that people forgot, since the shutdown, the touring circuit is glutted. I know this very directly. Ciccarelli said, you guys got to get out there and get out there fast because it's going to glut, which is exactly what we did. Put out the Love's Holiday, got out there on the road, started playing shows, go out again in June. But what happened between the tours of 2023 and now is that the glut started. It got harder to book. And what does that mean, harder? It means people are trying to get away with, okay, yeah, you can play Paris for 500 euros. It's like, bro, last time we played Paris, we got $9,000. Why would we accept 9,000 euros? Why would we accept 500 now? Take it or leave it. You know what? We're going to leave it. But we're going back to, of course, France this time, because after the last tour, they were like, oh, they're serious and they're going to pay us the fucking money. But Bruce, this is a bad look, man. And I think you might be Misty AF.
Singing about hobbits and shit.
Are they are they still singing about hobbits and shit, Iron Maiden? Because I mean, I gotta admit, I loved Old Maiden. I mean, I saw them in concert, Power Slave, Somewhere in Time. You know, what's that? Seven Son of a Seven Son.
I guess BC is now suggesting, has he always been a dickhead? I had no way of knowing this. He always seemed like a nice guy to me, but what do I know?
I really liked their first two albums, though, the original singer. The one they deny had any punk influence, even though it's so obvious. It's so incredibly punk.
That was
influence.
Pathetic. It was pathetic that they denied it. It was like crazy. It's like crazy that you would. Okay, whatever you say, boss. Stupid.
Thanks for joining us. Subscribe if you haven't already. And join our Patreon, patreon.com/ if the shoes fit. Follow us on Twitter at Eugenius Robinson, at Hey Not the Face, at Alexi Old, and please give us a thumbs up, Eugene.
Bingo! Oh man, this is weird. This bingo. You know what? Fuck.
Does it work for anybody?
No. Bingo. Nothing. I got nothing here.
Performance failure. You got to be used to it by now.
Look at the guy with the new girlfriend talking smack.
I'll buy 7 secret sources of inspiration. What are you pimping, John?
Well, I'll be cutting out pictures of girls in the magazine to make a new girlfriend.
Frankengirlfriend.
Yeah. You know, this one, well, this, I like her hair. Yes, yes.
Instead of vape pains, pens blowing up, right?
Is Columbia burning?
I talked about it last week. I guess this week, you know.
Yeah.
Is it going to still be there next week?
Of course it will be.
Yeah. I don't know. It's we could talk about the college protest, but it's just going to piss everybody. No one will like our takes, and we'll be demonetized by YouTube and blocked and all that stuff. So,
but if you join at a really high level on Patreon, we can not care about YouTube views.
We will do a whole YouTube.
Let me tell you a story that depressed everybody at the Aussie office. So they had Sochi Olympics. You remember the Sochi Olympics? And at the pavilion, jumped out for some art action were the members of Pussy Riot. And they were like, yeah, we're good. They jump out in literally within 3.7 seconds. Russian police were there with their truncheons and were just laying into them. And I'm recounting this in the office, the kitchen at Aussie, and I'm laughing my ass off. I go, that's what you call real politic. And everybody was like really down in the mouth and depressed at my attitude. I was like, if you climb into a bear's cave and the bear attacks you, as far as I'm concerned, that's a good day. That's a good bear day, right? What the fuck did you think was going to happen in Russia if you're protesting Putin at the Sochi Olympics with billions of dollars at stake? You lucky to be beaten with that. It's like swimming with a fucking... you know, sausages. I mean, in shark-infested waters, you got what was coming to you. I'm sorry if that offends you, but as far as I'm concerned, that's the proper order of business.
So. I saw something right before the show where they had somebody right before they seized the Hamilton Hall and renamed it. And the first, and I'm just watching it, and I'm thinking like, okay, if I'm somebody that's protesting there, when I hear the speaker say, and... our blood is going to be on your hands. Like, our what? Whoa, whoa, let me get out. Like, it's straight. It's like, are you okay?
I got job interviews on Tuesday. Blood.
Are you kidding me? Like, what? I don't know.
Oh, the Carlos Watson trial is coming up in May, man. This is the big moment, JB. It's coming. This is May. It is here.
Hold on. It's coming. Yeah. What are you starting out of the block, Eugene?
I didn't even get to answer, but I don't mind.
Oh, wait, John, sorry.
Oh, yeah, go.
No, we can go. You know what?
Go on ahead. I thought
I got the Hey Not the Face podcast. Me and Stephanie got new episodes, new articles. Sign up, subscribe. That way, you know, I'm doing this really quick so we can get to Eugene right away.
The Enterprise just we raised the question.
I'm here hanging out with I'm hanging out with the cat I inherited from the girl that died that Eugene didn't care about. So there we go. Make all you people feel bad.
Oh, no, but let me ask you this. Does your current girlfriend, how does she feel about you having a cat from somebody else?
Oh, yeah.
She's a big animal lover. She's a big animal lover, but I think, I do think she doesn't, I won't get into that stuff. Just on the pure, on the odds that maybe she does tune in eventually. No, she's fine. She likes the cat likes her. She likes the cat. She's a massive animal lover, so.
And did you name the cat after the dead girlfriend?
No, the cat was already named Isla. I got stuck with the. I had to break into her apartment to get the rescuer. So
and the cat's not looking at you funny when you're making out with the new lady, being like,
"No, she's a very very. She hates my mom, so that's the one bad thing. She's the only poor mom. So man. I'm completely pussy whipped. I mean, literally, this cat.
Not gonna pull a Christy gnome. Where's the gravel pit?
Jesus. Oh man.
And what are you starting out of the block, Eugene?
Well, the new issue of Decibel came out with my tribute. There you go. There's a back page. And what's funny about it is I wrote this as this friend of mine was laying in the hospital dying. And I say, and though as of this writing, right before I head over to the hospital to see him again, he's still alive. You know, his future, like the rest of ours, faded to end in tears, period. You know, then the next paragraph. He died 8 hours after I sent the article in. So this is a new issue of Decibel. That's the cover. So that came out today. And I got nothing else, man. I taking photos for Oxbow, getting ready to do some recording for the 11th song on the next record, which I'm now calling Follow Me in Merry Measure. That's all I got. Studio time. So I'm trying to preserve my voice.
JB has a question for you, John. The cat.
Yeah, it's both. The answer is obviously both. It's always both. They both hate me.
Until next week, no matter how tight, loose, or uncomfortable, remember these words. On this show, the shoes always fit, so we could never quit. John?
Nothing depressing. Not a single depressing thing out of your mouth.
I'm preoccupied with the playing with the cat. I'm sorry.
Good.
No.